At meetings and conventions Calgary, we know that people learn from using a variety of different techniques and innovative approaches. We are proud to partner with PCMA on the Convene podcast series. Contact us at meetingscalgary.com to learn more about experiencing Calgary.
Meetings industry leaders share their thoughts on the role meetings should or shouldn't play in driving social change. Contributing editor Regina McGee brings us our cover story for this month titled Flashpoints. A religious denomination and North America's largest annual show for the tabletop game industry. What do they have in common? Not much, you might think. But this past spring, the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ's General Assembly, and Gen Con moved to cancel conventions in Indianapolis following Indiana's passage of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA. Said supporters, the legislation opened the door for discrimination against the LGBT community. The organizations had plenty of company. 9 CEOs from Indiana's largest businesses also voiced opposition. Big brands like Apple and Walmart joined the fray, and Marriott president and CEO Arne Sorensen called the legislation pure idiocy from a business perspective. Salesforce.com CEO Mark Benioff, one of the new breed of social activist chief executives, tweeted that all employee travel to the state was canceled. Meanwhile, Indianapolis Convention Bureau Visit Indy voiced its opposition to the bill and worked in overdrive to get the message out that the city welcomed everyone. The upshot? A week after being signed into law, RFRA was revised to clarify that it could not be used to discriminate against business patrons based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. In the end, no scheduled conventions were canceled and RFRA disappeared from national headlines, but not without igniting a firestorm. Business and tourism interests successfully applied pressure to RFRA-type legislation under consideration in Georgia and Arkansas. Georgia's failed to pass, and Arkansas's was revised to prohibit discrimination against gays. And when Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal issued an executive order upholding religious freedom for businesses, the New Orleans Convention and Visitors Bureau and other industry groups openly challenged it. What's driving this unprecedented wave of social issue engagement by meeting and travel groups? We asked thought leaders from across the industry to weigh in. First is John Graham, President and CEO of the American Society of Association Executives, or ASAE. In a letter sent on behalf of ASAE to Indiana Governor Mike Pence, Graham called for the state's RFRA to be amended to protect civil rights. Laws that permit discrimination are not only regressive, they put our members at risk of being denied service anywhere, from restaurants to meetings and convention facilities.
Is the meetings industry becoming more outspoken on social issues?
Yes, as far as social issues that revolve around discrimination and accommodation, in particular discrimination based on sexual orientation. We've seen a rapid shift in less than a decade, with the majority of Americans accepting marriage equality for gays and lesbians, and just as the civil rights movement made race a protected class against discrimination, we are now seeing efforts to provide similar protections based on sexual orientation. Discrimination against LGBT people is a particular issue for our industry for a couple of reasons. There's a higher percentage than average of gays in the hospitality industry, and in addition to that, we're all in the business of providing accommodation, regardless of a person's disability, race, religious beliefs, or sexual orientation. It's about being accommodating and inviting to all.
What about other divisive social issues, such as immigration reform?
When immigration is framed as discrimination against a class of people, there is a lot of resonance in that. Right now, it's not as strong of an issue as sexual orientation, but that's not to say that 3 or 4 years from now, we might not be having a different conversation.
Corporate America is speaking out on LGBT issues as never before. What do you think is driving that?
A big factor is the millennial generation, which is more colorblind and more open to differences in sexual orientation than previous generations. Since millennials will shortly be 80% of the global workforce, corporations are more interested in aligning themselves with the social values of the next generation of workers and leaders. Next, we have Megan Tannell, Vice President of Exhibitions and Events for the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, or AEM, and chair of the International Association of Exhibitions and Events, or IAEE, which Tannell urged to issue a statement opposing Indiana's RFRA in an organizational first. Megan, why did you advocate for IAEE to come out with a statement opposing RFRA?
This was uncharted territory for the association, as we usually don't speak out on social or political issues, but we wanted to respond immediately to potential issues of discrimination affecting our industry. Of course, we didn't act unilaterally, but covered all our bases, checking in with other industry organizations like ASAE and the Society of Independent Show Organizers.
Did the original RFRA have any impact on AEM's meetings?
We hadn't been aware of what was going on at the state legislature level until it hit the front page news. At that point, we were in negotiations with Indianapolis for a trade show in 2018, but we put contract negotiations on hold after we became aware of what was going on. We didn't want to put our attendees in a situation where any of them would feel uncomfortable, even though we knew that our group would certainly be welcomed in Indianapolis. If a destination doesn't want you there, it doesn't bid on your business.
What challenge does this speak to on a personal level?
We live in a new era where the line between professional and personal is blurred as never before, thanks in large part to social media. Whatever our views are as individuals, we need to practice tolerance in the workplace and in our professions, and make everyone feel welcome, especially in our industry.
Now we go to Deborah Sexton, President and CEO of PCMA, which, as a member of the Meetings Mean Business Coalition, or MMBC, lent its support to MMBC's advocacy against RFRA. When RFRA was revised to protect LGBT rights, Sexton issued a note in support of meeting in Indiana. Deborah, why did you feel it was important for PCMA to release a message in support of Visit Indy and the amended version of RFRA?
Through our collaboration with the Meetings Means Business Coalition, PCMA participated in speaking out against RFRA as it was approaching the governor's desk, yet he still signed the bill into law. Once the collective voices and outrage were heard and RFRA was amended, it was important for PCMA to show support for Visit Indy and the entire Indiana hospitality community, who from the beginning had opposed RFRA.
Do you think the meetings and travel sector is becoming more outspoken on social issues?
I don't think the rise in outspokenness is unique to the meetings and travel sector. It's everyone. With today's 24/7 news cycle, where many news outlets now believe it's their job to create the news versus reporting it, we are constantly on and informed. Opinions are now relentlessly streaming through our mobile devices versus having to wait for the 6 o'clock newscast, and we have the technology to instantly respond.
Is a destination boycott an appropriate response to legislation or policies that meeting organizers and/or their attendees don't agree with?
Those often hurt by destination boycotts are the innocent bystanders, the minimum wage workers who have no influence on the political agenda and are dependent on their employment to feed their families. Boycotts should be a last resort tactic and not considered until all the facts are crystal clear and we know exactly how the boycott will impact the community. Now we'll hear from Michael Garish, who stepped down as president and CEO of Destination Marketing Association International, or DMAI, last month. We spoke to Garish before he left DMAI. Not long after it was announced at DMAI's annual convention in July that an updated version of its DMO advocacy toolkit, one that includes social issues, is available. Michael, how was the reaction against religious freedom legislation introduced in various states different from previous responses to controversial legislation?
The role of business is changing in our culture. We've seen this happen formally through Supreme Court cases such as Citizens United, and informally with businesses like Starbucks that are attempting to stimulate social conversations. There's no doubt that companies like Apple, Walmart, and Salesforce played a major role in reshaping the RFRA legislation in Indiana. At the same time, local experiences and culture are playing a greater role in the destination selection process for leisure and business travelers alike. Amadeus just released its Future Traveler Tribes 2030 report. One of the influential tribes is Ethical Travelers, who allow their conscience in some form to be their guide when organizing and undertaking travel. In essence, the brand of a destination is playing a greater role for consumers. Choosing a meeting destination is now about much more than infrastructure and square footage.
How does this change the role of DMOs?
The DMO role is evolving as the travel ecosystem evolves. This is the focus of the Destination Next initiative, which DMAI launched during our convention last year. We surveyed 327 DMOs from 36 countries and found a number of new emerging roles being contemplated by DMOs, including DMOs playing a more central role in advocacy for a destination, becoming more involved in broader economic development, forming more strategic alliances outside the DMO industry. Advocacy is a critical component in Phase 2 of Destination Next, and we've just released a new version of the DMO Advocacy Toolkit, which showcases case studies that we hope will help foster a community of DMOs that are championing the social and economic viability of their communities.
Next is David Peckinpah, President of Merit's Travel Company and Experient and Co-Chair of MMBC. Earlier this year, Peckinpah and MMBC co-chair Michael Dominguez wrote a blog post titled, What the Meetings and Events Industry Can Learn from RFRA, which concludes, with the potential for RFRA to emerge as an issue in more than a dozen other states, it may now be time to ask whether it is fair to leverage local businesses in order to win political battles. David, why did MMBC write this post?
Our mandate at MMBC is to protect and defend the value of face-to-face gatherings. That's the essence of our mission, not taking stands on political or social issues. But we thought it was unfair, the knee-jerk reactions that some had to boycott Indiana, which would negatively impact businesses like hotels and restaurants, the vast majority of which support the LGBT community and which employ a lot of LGBT people. We wanted to convey the message that meetings should not be used as weapons.
Speaking as the CEO of a major corporation, why do you think corporations are getting involved in social issues?
Corporate social responsibility is evolving, and what we are seeing is that for more and more companies, corporate culture is being defined by the values of the individuals who make up the enterprise. This very much affects meetings as well. You see RFPs now stipulating sustainability practices and asking about core company values, for instance. We've also seen meetings and hospitality groups taking on a major social issue, combating human trafficking with the End Child Prostitution, Abuses, and Trafficking Initiative.
Stephen Perry is president and CEO of the New Orleans Convention and Visitors Bureau, one of the largest economic development corporations in Louisiana. Perry has helped shape national travel policy in various roles, including serving on the first U.S. Travel and Tourism Advisory Board, formed by President Obama in 2010. Weeks after the firestorm over Indiana's RFRA, a similar bill was proposed in the Louisiana State Legislature. Perry marshaled local and state businesses and other tourism groups to oppose the legislation, which was voted down in committee. When Governor Bobby Jindal then issued an executive order mirroring the intent of the bill, Perry and other tourism leaders responded with a statement saying the executive order did not carry the weight of law, was a political positioning statement by a presidential candidate, and was bad for the state's economy. Stephen, what was the New Orleans CVB's goal in opposing the governor's executive order?
For the first time, after a lot of discussion, the New Orleans CVB took a leadership position in rallying businesses and groups statewide to prevent laws and policies that could harm our economy and brand. But this is really a national story playing out on state and local levels. We are seeing a major shift in how our industry approaches politics and social issues, and it all ties in with the evolution of the U.S. Travel Association over the last decade or so, starting when President and CEO Roger Dow stepped in to lead the association. Roger has strategically built out the reach of the travel industry, involving major DMOs from around the country, and has put together a potentially astute staff with strong ties to Capitol Hill. Now we have the U.S. Travel Promotion Act, the U.S. Travel PAC, and the Meetings Mean Business Coalition, and the U.S. travel industry has become a major player in shaping travel policy. On the state and local level, we're seeing a linkage as never before between DMOs, local and national businesses, and governing bodies coming together. It's historic and a quantum leap forward.
Destination boycotts have a lot of power to push back against these kind of controversial laws. What do you think of them?
This is an age-old question, a real conundrum. But boycotting a destination is not the right way to achieve results. When I was a teenager, I went to college for a while in the Soviet Union and traveled around behind the Iron Curtain. And I could see then the impact that travel could have in changing the world. Travel is the ultimate enemy of bigotry and ignorance, and has a profound impact on tearing down walls, real or imaginary. Travel and meetings are powerful tools for helping to create more tolerance and openness.
Where do you see the next step?
I see the next step in brand development. Whether it's a convention, a destination, or a business, is going to be around social values and creating strategic partnerships with organizations that share those values. I think we will continue to see pushback as an appropriate business and moral decision to laws and policies that discriminate. We need to welcome everyone and stand for the protection of all citizens' right to travel. Reverend Dr. Susan Watkins is President and General Minister of the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, which has been headquartered in Indianapolis for nearly a century. Watkins and other church board members voted unanimously to move their 2017 General Assembly, scheduled for Indianapolis, to a different state after Indiana's RFRA was signed into law, which would mean the loss of about $5.9 million in visitor spending in the city. The Christian Church later reversed that decision when RFRA was amended to preclude discrimination against LGBT people. Susan, why did the board vote to cancel the 2017 meeting in Indianapolis?
We are all about celebrating religious freedom. It's one of the hallmarks of our church. But we are also about diversity and inclusion. And RFRA was divisive in this regard.
What were the financial stakes in canceling the convention?
The financial losses to us could have been tens of thousands of dollars. There were other cities who contacted us, indicating a willingness to enter into negotiation, but thankfully the situation was resolved before we had to count all the costs, from negotiated hotel rates to transportation. We were firm in our decision that our attendees needed to be assured of welcome.
Had your church ever canceled a convention before?
One other time that I am aware of that we considered moving a scheduled assembly was in the 1960s, when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was scheduled to speak. Local people were nervous about him as a speaker. Our leader at the time, Dr. A. Dale Fears, looked at his associate and asked, "What were the other cities that wanted this assembly?" The assembly was not moved, and Dr. King was the speaker.
Here's a sidebar to the main story, a feature titled "An Immediate Negative Economic Impact." Braden King, Ph.D., is an associate professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, specializing in how social movement activists influence corporate social responsibility, organizational change, and legislative policymaking. His research on boycotts as a tool for social change points to differences in impact between product boycotts versus destination boycotts. King told Convene, "Consumer boycotts of products rarely have a big impact on company sales because consumers simply don't change their behavior very often. But these kinds of boycotts can be effective nonetheless. Companies in the news because of a boycott feel pressure to change the attention from negative to positive to prevent their reputation from being eroded. Convention boycotts, in contrast, can have an immediate negative economic impact and, in addition, create negative media attention for a destination and its businesses. This reputational threat may actually have a longer-term impact on the destination than the initial influence of lost revenue," he said. King also points to the powerful role of social media in driving change. Tweets and Facebook posts about the Confederate flag after the June church massacre in Charleston, South Carolina, drove Amazon, Sears, eBay, and Walmart to stop selling Confederate flag items, he said. And when presidential candidate Donald Trump made inflammatory remarks about Mexican immigrants, social media protest led to companies distancing themselves from him, including Macy's dropping its Trump line of clothing. Social media is a platform, both a public forum for information on social issues and a megaphone for activists, King said. In the past, networking has been about creating membership lists and showing up to events. For many activist organizations, now it's about getting people to jump in and retweet or hyperlink when the time has come to engage in online activism.
Here's another sidebar article titled Race Relations and Meetings. At the start of 2014, just 3% of Black Americans ranked race relations as the most important problem facing the United States in a Gallup poll. By July 2015, that number had climbed to 13%. Over the same period, white Americans' mentions of race relations as a top problem increased only from 1% to 4%. These numbers hint at the fractured debate over race in the United States that has become increasingly high profile over the past few months, with meetings and events often serving as a bargaining chip, backdrop, or stage. When Baltimore erupted in riots after the death of 25-year-old Black man Freddie Gray while in police custody in April, for example, the city suffered a blow to its image. Several canceled meetings during the resulting unrest, and a decline in tourism business that stretched into the fall. That said, according to Visit Baltimore, a record 30 citywide conventions have been booked for the Baltimore Convention Center in 2015. With an expected $138 million in economic impact. A day after South Carolina legislators voted this past July to take down the Confederate battle flag that had flown over or around the state capitol since 1961, the NAACP ended its 15-year boycott of the Palmetto State, passing a resolution at its 2015 annual convention in Philadelphia. The vote came weeks after the shooting deaths of 9 African Americans in a historically Black church in Charleston. Photos of the shooter brandishing the Confederate flag were later found on a white supremacist website. The shooter has been charged with hate crimes. The National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA, which had observed the NAACP boycott by refusing to allow South Carolina to host its NCAA basketball championship tournaments, also lifted its ban. How much did the boycott cost South Carolina? Estimates vary, said NAACP President and CEO Cornell William Brooks.
In no way does removing the Confederate flag in South Carolina fix the problems of our nation that are rooted in racism and bigotry. But the flag's removal is a very important step in ceasing to glorify a bygone era in which African Americans were treated as second-class citizens. This is a vindication of the grassroots advocacy of the NAACP.